Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back. Today's Daf is Avodah Zarah in Beis. We begin five lines off the top of the Amud with a story. Hahu Gavra, there was this fellow who owned a property. And he tells his friend Shimon, the Amr Le Chavrei. So he tells his friend, Shimon, Imaz Binina Law. If it should come, the day that I actually sell this piece of real estate, Laha Ara, this land, guess what? You will be my customer. I'll come to you and offer it to you. Lacha Mizabnina Law. I'm going to sell it to you. And actually, Rashi says, they made a kinyan. So he made a kinyan that if I sell it, it's yours from now. So it was more than just a commitment, explains the Ritva. He actually made a kinyan that if come the day I sell this property, okay, if I put this property up for sale, it's yours from today. And guess what? He turned around and sold it to somebody else. Azal, he went Zavna, Linish, Achrin, he sold it to somebody else. Amar Rav Yosef, Kana Kama, the first fellow, Shimon, acquired the property. It's his, because he was the first buyer. Amale Abaye, Sabaye tells Rav Yosef, hold it. I mean, Volay Pasak, he committed to him, but he never made a price. And without a price, there's no deal. How could you commit? There's no set value. You have no clue how much it's going to be. So any talk, any kinyan is just premature and non-committal. Umanatayim radachalecha dalei pasak leikana. Says the Gemara, so how do we even know this? That when there's no pasak, when there's no set value, there's no set price, there can't be a kinyan. That's the Mishnah we had yesterday, right? That's not. We had a Mishnah. If a Yid sells his wine to a guy, pasak achalei modad, damav mutarin. If there was a pasak, they set the rate before he gave it to him, before he measured it up into his kli, before he transferred the material. So he knew what he was getting himself into. He knew what it was going to cost him, and he made a kinyan meshicha. So even if he tampered with it afterwards, it became yain nesach and tainted. Dumb of mataran, the wine seller couldn't get paid for it because it already belonged to the guy. Madad actually pasak. However, if he did a medida before he made a price, dumb of asurin. At that point, it still belongs to the seller because the buyer has not yet really committed to it. Without knowing a rate, how could you buy something without having a price? So it still belongs to the Jewish owner. Now, if it becomes Yai Nesach, technically it's the seller's wine that became Asur, he can't accept payment for it. Evidently, in order for a sale, for a deal to go through, you need a psika, you need a rate, you need a price. Therefore, in our case, says Abaye to Rav Yosef, how could you suggest that the first fellow is the rightful owner? True, he received a commitment, a verbal commitment, an actual kinyan commitment from the real estate owner. But until they set the price, until they agree on a rate, there's no deal. Says the Gemara, okay, my haviyelo. So what's the conclusion on this shaila, on this case? Says the Gemara, what do you mean, my haviyelo? What do you mean? What's the conclusion? Kedekamrina. We just concluded that without known value, there's no deal. Says the Gemara, no. Dilma chumra di yai nesach shani. Perhaps you can't prove anything. You can't conclude from the story of the yai nesach because maybe we treat it more severely. Chumra di yai nesach because of its avodah zarah connection. We're mamachmer. We say that it's not considered sold until the price was fully agreed upon. That we can still consider it the Israel's wine, which became Asur, etc., etc. But in the case of the real estate commitment, perhaps it's different. So now we're going to proceed to another attempt at a raya. Whether pasak is a precondition even for other kinyanim, other items. Tashma, damar vidi bar avin. So he told us like this. Uvda hava b'rav chizda. There was a similar story to this in the Beis Medrash, you know, was brought to the Beis Medrash of Rav Chizda, this type of case where there was a kinyan without a known value. Rav Chizda b'Rav Huna, he brought it to Rav Huna, upashtema desnan or desanyim, and he clarified it based on a brice, where in fact we say that pasak is indeed a precondition for a kinyan. So Moshe chamorov apoyala mechnisan tech beisoy. We have chamorov, the fellows leading the donkeys with the produce on it. We have the poyalov, or the fellow has his workers. So basically, we have a grain dealer with loaded donkeys and drivers bringing them into town. We have the grain dealer with his workers loaded up personally with those bags of grain. Now the customer was Moishech. He took possession, so to speak. He grabbed the donkey drivers. Here, come. Or the workers with the sacks on their backs. So he never did actual Meshicha. He never took physical possession of the sacks themselves, per se. It was only, together with the person. He pulled the person, he brought the animal, Moshe Chamarov HaPayal V'Yechnisim, even though the customer invited them into his home, V'Yechnisim Tech Beisoy. So at this point, there was no Meshicha done. Rashi says that the Meshicha has to be done on the actual produce. Ein Meshicha koina bivnei adam. You can't do Meshicha on a person, even though the produce happens to be sitting on his back. There's no kinyan on the payers at this point. So now, bein pasak achele madat. Whether he was pasak, they set a price. But there was no medida yet. He did not really measure up the produce. He didn't take it into his kelim. He didn't physically take possession of the wheat. So there's no kinyan. Or ubein moda dachalei pasak. Suppose he did do medida. He removed the sacks. He put it into his brought it into his possession. But he hadn't yet made a pasak. There was no price set. Laikana. In both these cases, no kinyan. And therefore, Shneyan, Ushneyan, Yecholin, Lachs, Abraham, both the seller and the buyer can back out. Because there's no deal executed at this point. However, Parkon v'chisach beisai, suppose he unloaded the sacks, Parkon v'chnisan tech beisai, and took it into his home. And Rashi says, your home is your domain. It's like Meshicha, right? A Kinyan Chatzar, it's in your place. Pasak achalei modad ein shneyin yecholin lachzor b'hen. As long as there was a pasak, even though he didn't yet measure it up, he didn't fill it into his containers with the doesn't matter because the stuff's sitting in your house. And since there was a pasak, now it's in your home, you're kinda. However, modad achalei pasak, if he filled up his containers but has not yet received notice of a price, he's not yet reliant on it, he's not committed to it, Shneyan, Yecholin, Nachsman, both. Seller and buyer can back out because there's no kinyan. Clearly, Pesika is a requirement for the conclusion and execution of a deal. Likewise, the fellow who promised to sell his property to Mr. X and sold it to Mr. Y, inasmuch as he committed to Mr. X, but there was no deal because there was no pasak. Nobody had any clue about rate and price. And it's not a done deal. Another story of a fellow, the Amrilei L'chavrei, turns to his friend and tells him, if in fact I end up selling this property, I sell it to you for $100. And what happened? He turned around and sold the same property to somebody else, but for much more money, $420. The first fellow is considered the owner of the property because he made a kinyan. He's the first buyer. And this time, He did it right. He set a price, $100. And he made a kinyan, right? Maskevlo, Rav Yaakov. He had a question. Rav Yaakov Benar Pekoit. He challenged the ruling of Rav Kahana. You know, this fellow evidently wasn't really willing to sell the property for 100, right? You see, ultimately he didn't sell it for 100. He sold it for 120. It's a new deal. It's a new mindset. It's a new circumstance. Hi, this seller, Zuzi, the extra money that he got offered, the 120, and so that forced him to sell it. He never committed to sell it to Reuven under these circumstances, to Shimon under these circumstances. Reuven was the seller, right? He committed to Shimon, I'll sell it to you, i.e. if I sell it for its presumed value of 100. He didn't do that. He wasn't really willing to sell it for 100. The only reason why he sold it is because somebody gave him this extravagant offer, this deal of 120. It's a totally new setting, a new circumstance, new set of circumstances. He never committed to Shimon under those circumstances. And therefore, according to this shita, it belongs to the new buyer, not to Shimon. Vilchasa, that's the Gemara's conclusion. The halacha is Rav Yaakov Benar Pekoit. He's no longer committed to the original fellow. He can stick with this deal of 120. Now let's say, new story. Reuven tells Shimon, you know, I'll sell you the property here. And he's going to sell it to him. But in terms of determining value, k'dishoymi b'tlase. You know what? We're not sure how much it's really worth. We'll have three individuals make a shuma, an evaluation, an appraisal, an estimate. And that's how we'll proceed. K'dishoymi b'tlase. So Rashi explains that typically when you say a lashon of three, it's like a bezdin, like a court. In a court, all you need is a majority. As long as two out of the three, you know, go a certain direction, that's the ruling of the court. Furthermore, since he used the lashon of shuma k'dishaymi, you know, rather than just, you know, as will be dictated by three, he didn't say dictated or conveyed by three. He said the appraisal presented by three. That sounds more like a formal type of, institutional type of, you know, verdict. So it's again, it's a Bezdin type of reference. And therefore, says the Gemara, afilu terei migoit lasa. You'll follow the ruling, the number presented by even two out of those three. So even if the third fellow disagrees, we follow the majority of the three, like in any Bezdin. And the number that's cited by the two, that determines the value, the price of the property. However, if he tells him, I'm going to sell it to you based on k'da amri b'tlasa, based on what's dictated by three, since he switched to amri rather than shuma, ad'da amri b'tlasa. In this case, it's not based on an institutional verdict, based on the bezdin type of system where a majority determines, rather has to be dictated and conveyed by all three and agreed upon unanimously by all three individuals. Ad amri bitlos. What if he says k'dishaymi barbo? According to the price, according to the shuma of four individuals. Now four is clearly not a bezdin number. See, here he literally meant he wants that all four will unanimously converge on a certain number. Ad amri ba'arba. We need all four on board. Because otherwise, why? Why four? What's unique about four? Vikoshkin, certainly, hecha da amrle, certainly if he tells him k'da amri ba'arba, where he says it's four, and k'da amri, as will be conveyed by four, he means literally all four have to be on board. Amrle k'da shami bitlas. Okay, back to that first expression. As per the appraisal of three. V'asut lasa v'shamu. Three came along and evaluated and set a price at $1 million. B'amali idach. So now the other fellow says, well, the buyer says, well, you know what, I'm not relying on them. I want another crew to come along and give us their opinion. I don't like these three people. I don't really like them. I'll get another group of three. The Kimut Tfei, who are more expert. And we'll determine the price based on their recommendation. Amar Papa, yeah, he's right. Dino Hudemakav, he has a right to wait up on it. Maska Florav Huna Verde Vishua. What do you mean? Mimai Dahani Kimul Tfei. Who says a second crew is more expert than the first crew? Dilmahani Kimul Tfei. Perhaps the first crew are more expert, knowledgeable than the second crew. See, there's no end. It's a never-ending proposition. And certainly, they're committed to the numbers presented by the first evaluation crew. Vilchasan Esti Alocha, Kravunu Rishua, that the nobody can come and appeal their numbers. Okay, so we had a couple of stories where a person had committed to selling a certain property to a certain person, made a kinyan. However, there needs to be a pasak. It needs to have been a price that was set and determined for the commitment to go through. We had the story where he was, offered a larger amount, and he went with that one. He has a right to do so. And we also learned various lishonos of how to determine, the market value, the true value of real estate. Says the Gemara. So we have a wine cellar again, who picks up the mashpech, that's the funnel, and he pours through it into the container. So he finished with that customer, and then he tends to the next customer, who happens to be a Jewish customer. And he goes ahead and he pours through the thing into the Jewish customer's container. So he's a Jewish wine seller. He sells to a guy, measures up for the Yid. Also, so the question is it a problem using the same funnel for both customers? So it depends. If there is some droplets of wine stuck on the bottom of this funnel from the previous customer, which happened to be a guy, then you can't use the same piece of equipment for the Yiddish customer. The Gemara will explain what the problem is. Because really, the wine as it was poured through was still kosher. So what's the issue? We'll see. Next case. Hama'ar mekli al kli. So here it's a goy actually, who's pouring some wine from one kli to the other. It's kosher wine. Es she'ira mimenu muta. The wine that's still sitting in the upper kli is okay. Ves she'ira l'teuchei asr. As opposed to the wine sitting in the bottom kli. The wine that was poured into it is asr, because it was poured by a guy. However, the wine still in the upper kli, since it's still in the kli, it's not affected by the guy's action. Tanan Hasam. We have a Mishnah stated in Maseches Taharis regarding liquid, connectivity. Hanitzik. Nitzik is a gush of liquid, a flow coming through the air, okay? A pour. Vaka Tafris, a similar type of configuration, but here it's sort of flowing on a surface, so it's flowing downward. Nitzuk is in the air, Katafris is actually flowing on a trickling on a surface. Mashkut efeach. That means moisture. It's not wet enough to be considered real liquid. Rashi says it means to say that you touch it, you feel the moisture, but it's not enough so that it will get transferred to something else. Right, when you touch it, and you go ahead and touch a different surface, that second surface didn't get wet because there was not enough liquid for the transfer. So it's a slight moisture. These three types of liquid configurations, eino yichibur, is not considered a connection. Lo yilotumo v'lo yitahar. Rashi explains like this. So, let's say you're pouring, okay, you're taking a pitcher, pouring some water out, which now is flowing through the air and hitting the container on bottom. Comes along a person who's tamei and touches. While you're pouring, he touches the water on bottom. So that portion certainly becomes tummy. What about the upper portion? It's not a chibur, it's not a connection. So the upper portion is still tahar. Katafras, likewise, you have water trickling downward on the surface. You touch the bottom part, the upper part does not become tummy. Eino chibur lila tumav lila tahara. Likewise, if it's mashka tefech, just light moisture, and there is actual water touching that moisture, you touch the moisture with your tummy hand, it doesn't affect the water next to it. So there's no chibur for tuma, and likewise, there's no chibur for tahara as well. They're not considered connected. They're not considered one entity, one unit, with respect to tahara. How's that? So Rashi explains regarding a mikveh. Suppose you have, you know, a real mikveh here. And you have another little pool of water, which is not big enough for a mikveh. Doesn't have the required shear of 40 saw. But there's a connection between that little puddle and the real mikveh. It's connected by way of a gush of water, a nitzuk, a katafris, a mashka tefech. It doesn't affect a connection. Doesn't make it one. In which case, if one does his tevila in the little ditch on the side, doesn't qualify. He hasn't been in a mikveh because it's not connected to the mikveh. However, says the Mishnah, hashboiren, if it's just a still body of water. Rashi explains the word ashburn means a crack in the ground. So it's like a pool of water standing still. It's not moving, it's not flowing, and it's real water. That can make a connection with respect to everything. Right? So if it's touching the mikveh, it becomes part of the mikveh. Right? And if it's touching another pool of water and a person's tummy touches that other pool, so this water becomes tummy as well. Basically, it's one and the same. If it's flowing, if it's in the air, if it's just a trickling, in a trickling state, then it's not one entity. It's moving, it's flying, right? But if it's standing still, it has the ability to connect to the water next to it, it's all one entity. Hashburin is considered a chibur latumu ulatahara, both ways. Amar Rav Huna, despite us having just learned that a flow, a trickle, is not considered like standing water. It doesn't make a connection between standing water and the tummy and whatever. It's not set in place. It's in transit. It's in motion, right? But when it comes to the Yayin Nesach issues, because it's Avodah Zarah connotations, well, more machmer. And it does make a connection. Amar Rav Huna nitzak v'katafris u'mashke tefeach. These three do make a connection. Chibur le'inyin yayin nesach. So basically, let's say nitzak would be a person is takes a bottle of kosher wine, pours it into a kli which has yayin nesach in it. It's like the yayin nesach travels upwards, conducts upwards into the upper kli, and everything becomes yayin nesach. Even though, again, it's a nitzuk. It's in transit. It's flying. It's flowing. It's considered one and the same entity. And it all becomes asr. Womachm bayayinas. Amli Rav Nachman Rav Huna. How do you know this is true? But no locha. Where do you get this from? Ilem b'desnan. Is it because you inferred from that previously quoted Mishnah that in fact it is so, the Yai Nesach is treated differently, Midasnan, Ilam Midasnan, Hanitzuk, Akatafris, Mashka Defeach, doesn't make a connection. Eino Echibur is not regarded as one and the same as the actual body of water. Eino Echibur, Lutumo, Lutahara, and we make a diyuk. With respect, Lutumo, Lutahara, there it doesn't connect. Who do they have Echibur? Oh, but should we infer from there, Lini Nai Nesach, if it pertains to Halachas V'Yai Nesach, have a chibur. In fact, it's considered connected and one and the same. Is that your source from that Mishnah? Well, if that's the case, Emo Sefer. Let's proceed to the second part of the Mishnah that we just quoted, Hashboirin, if in fact it's a proper body of water. Chibur Lutum Utahar, it can connect the body next to it with respect to all kinds of consequences. But not all. It says Tumah v'Tahara. Shall we infer that only Tumah v'Tahara pertain to matters of purity? Huda v'Chibur is considered connected Ha'alini Yai Nesach, but if it should pertain to anything connected to Yai Nesach, Lo v'Chibur, it doesn't make a connection, which is hard to believe, since you just told me the Yai Nesach is more severe. So we have conflicting inferences in the Mishnah. Here it seems Yai Nesach is more severe, here it seems it's less severe. When this happens, it's like a clash. We can't really know which one's, you know, the part of the mission to focus on, and which one is just, you know, sort of coming along secondarily, which is the real inference, which is just the secondary, and therefore, you can't draw any conclusions from this Mishnah, one way or the other. But in any case, Rav Huna did take the position that Yai Nesach is more severe, and these types of, you know, moving liquids can be considered one and the same as the Yai Nesach that they touch, in which case everything becomes Yai Nesach. It's not. Okay, let's take a look at the Mishnah we just learned, and perhaps find a source for this halacha of Rav Huna that Nitzuk is considered a chibur for Yai Nesach. Tanan, not to less a mashpech, right? The wine cellar grabbed the funnel. Umadad, latoich, slichisei, shalev kechamon. So first he poured in for the goy. V'chazer umadad, latoich, slichisei, shishron. Then he poured it into the Jewish customer. Im yeshba, keves yain, also if there's some wine droplets on the bottom of the funnel, then the Jewish customer is in trouble. Now, how did that wine become affected? How did it become tainted? These traces of wine on the bottom of the funnel, but my kamitzra, why did it become asr? It never touched the goy or even the goy's wine. Right? First he poured through it to the goy's container, but it was suspended mid-air. Never actually touched the goy, right? And then he took it and used it for the Yisrael. Oh, lav benitzuk. The only way is through Nitzuk, because this funnel was used to transfer through it, the gush of wine, the flow, the current that was going into the Goy's barrel, which eventually became usher when it hit the Goy's barrel, right? Part of that flow, part of that Nitzuk was coming through the funnel at the time, which tainted all that wine in the funnel as well. Hence, it cannot be used for kosher wine. Shmamin and Nitzuk Chibur. Clearly, we learn from here that Nitzuk, in fact, is a connection. Well, says the Gemara, not so quick. Tani Rav Chiya. The truth is, Rav Chiya had a braisa to explain this mishnah, to explain this halach. And he added a very important fact. The reason why the funnel became tainted by the wine on bottom, the wine beneath it, wasn't through Nitzuk, wasn't through, you know, remote control. It got slapped, it got hit by the wine in the container beneath it. Basically, when it filled, the wine level rose up until it actually bumped into the bottom of the funnel. And that wine was real Yai Nesach. It was a true connection, it wasn't just a remote connection. Well, says the Gemara, okay, so now we can infer the opposite. Explained it this way, doesn't that indicate to us that in the absence of direct contact, there would be no issue of Nitzuk? The mere flow wouldn't create an issue. In contrast to Rav Huna, so it's actually returning something which we figured was a proof to Rav Huna as an actual contest on Rav Huna. But if there was no contact by the water beneath it, by the wine beneath it, would be no issue. Tifshet the nitzik any chibur. Perhaps you can now conclude the opposite. But other than direct contact, just a flow would not be considered a connection. Well, not necessarily. Certainly, you know that if the wine rose up and actually bumped into the funnel, then it's certainly a problem. Tifshelach the aser. Of course, it's aser. Nitzik the boy, but we still perhaps can leave Nitzuk up in the air. We're not sure. Rav Chiya was sure that if it was direct contact, he's in trouble. But anything less than that, well, it's still up in the air, unresolved. Tashma, let's try to prove it from the other halacha in the Mishnah. Amara mikli likli. So, at this point, we figure it's a yid a Yisrael who's doing the pouring. He's pouring from his kli to the kli of the goy, which has, you know, yayin nesach. Hamara mekli lekli. What's the status of the wine that's in transit? Es shema'ara mimenu mutter. So the wine is still in the bottle on top and the barrel on top is okay. Okay, so that's the halacha of the Mishnah. That wine is still safe. Let's make an inference, a diuk. Ha devene veni. Also, what about the wine that's in transit, midair? That's now connected to the wine on bottom. That's already usher. Shema mino nitzuk chibur. Clearly we see a nitzuk makes a connection. And that's why only the wine actually in the kli is safe. But anything that's part of that flow is usher. Nitzuk chibur says, if that's the case, a nitzuk makes a connection. I feel the gavi demon and I'm a litzur. So then, even the wine, the gavid wine, which is inside the upper container, should still be asr, because it's all one flow. Halakasha, the answer could be like this. The kamakatev katufi. What happened was, he poured, but a little at a time. Chunk at a time. Right? So he sort of jolted the bottle. Wine left, and he pulled back, so there's no connect. He disconnected himself from that flow. So instead of pouring, you know, continuously, in an uninterrupted manner, he threw it in a choppy manner. So only the wine that's actually part of that flow and connects to the bottom is called nitzuk, becomes asur. Not so the wine that's in the bottle on top, which is now disconnected. Mekalam kam nitzuk chibur. But in any case, can still prove from here that nitzuk is a chibur. That explains why the wine that's midair, that's connected to the wine on bottom, is us. Says the Gemara of Letameich. Now, according to you, aim is safe. Are you telling me that the wine it's in this flow is us? Aim is safe. Let's move on to the next part of the Mishnah, where it says es she'eru l'toicho d'asur. Right? The Mishnah says that the wine already contained in the container below is asr. Let's make a diuk. Only that's asr. Anything above that, even though it's headed to the kli and connected to the kli, hadaveinei veini, anything in between the two kalim, even though it's a nitzuk, it's the flow whose bottom, you know, part of that flow is touching the bottom kli, shari is still okay. So you see, nitzuk is not a connection. So once again, we have sort of conflicting inferences in the Mishnah. We're not sure which way to go. Lamaha, Leko, Lamash Minah. From this Mishnah, we can't really conclude either way. Not that the current of the Nitzuk is a connection, nor that it's not a connection. Toshma, let's bring a Raya from a Bryce. Hama'ora Mechavis Labar. So a fellow was pouring from a barrel into a cistern, into a pit, a storage pit, where there was already yayin nesach. Kiluach hayoreid misvas chavis ulmata asu. So the kiluach, which is the current, the flow of wine, once passed the lip of the barrel, meaning anything beyond the barrel, right, on its way down, is asur. And again, we presume because of its connection to the wine and the pit, which is asur, that isur sort of conducts upwards and affects the entire flow. We see nitzuk is chibur. Says the Gemara, no, Tirah Gemara, Rav Sheshes explained that this Bryce is not speaking about a Yisrael who's pouring. Actually, it's a guy, as we explained back in the Mishnah, right? B'Evet Gechav Hamar was speaking about a guy who's doing the pouring. And the issue is not because the wine is connected to the Yayin Nesach and the pit. No, the Asim Yikei Chachamim banned this wine because it's being handled by a guy. It's being poured out mikay chay through his energy, through his doing. Even though there's no direct contact with that wine. So any wine that's been poured out is us. Well, says the Gemara, Ovid Gechav HaMa'arav, was speaking about the guy is doing the pouring. I feel Gavla Chavis, even the wine inside the barrel that he's handling, that he's holding, Nami Mitzvah should also become affected. fact is, he's pouring it. The fact is, handling it. Well, says the Gemara, not so far. Wine, which is sort of moving around by the guy's action without direct contact with the wine, right? It's only asur midrabbanan because it can lead to, you know, more direct contact. So we limit that isra hude nafak levaroi, the wine that actually exited, that left the barrel on its way down through the guy's pour, gazru b'rabbanan, disallowed it because, you know, you see it, it's visible, it's accessible, and it came about through the guy's pouring, it's asur. But the wine's still within the barrel, which hasn't been exposed and poured out, even though it's been handled by the guy by way of the barrel that he's moving around. Because Rabban did not make it xera and did not make it us. Continues the Gemara with another episode relating to the Jewish wine sellers with their non-Jewish customers. And teaching them how to avoid any issue with the Ayin Nesach. Amar lu Rav Chizda. Rav Chizda turned and spoke to these Lahanu, those Savyasa, the Jewish wine sellers. He told them like this: Ki kailisu chamra. When you measure up the wine, when you transfer the wine to the loyv dechamra to your goyish buyers, be careful. Katfi katufi. So this is similar to what we said before. You got to cut off the flow. Ensure there's no uninterrupted flow from your barrel into the goyish container, because he holds a nitzuk as a chibur, and you're going to affect everything within your barrel. So pour it in a choppy, cut-off fashion. Drop it a little, pull back. Drop, pull back. Right? This way, there's never a connection between your barrel, the wine within your barrel, and the container on bottom. Inami, another option would be, toss it from a distance. Sort of toss the liquid from a distance. Napzi, naputze. Instead of standing over there and pouring it down, make your barrel sort of level with the container and toss it upwards and sideways. This way there's absolutely no continuity. There's no connection between the two, the contents of the two kelim. This way you're safe from any issues of yainas. Amar lu Rava. Rava turned lahanu shefachai to those Jewish workers who would be the ones pouring the wine from one kli to the other. And again, he told them a similar advice. Kishavchisu chamra, when you pour your wine from one kli to the other. And I was speaking that they're both belonging to a yid. There's no issue of yayin nesach per se at this point, but there were guys who workers in the area. Be careful that you don't, have the guy do this job. It's a job that only a yid can do. Kishavchisu chamra, when you pour your wine from one container to the other, be careful. Don't allow the guy to give you a hand. Do mishtalisu, because you might not realize. You might forget. Vishadisu le'alei, and you'll leave the kli in the hands of the guy. In which case, the wine will be transferred by way of the guy's act of pouring and becomes asr. So we see from this Gemara that in fact, if he would not abandon the kli in the hands of the guy, if you would be still holding on to the kli, even if the guy is helping, that's still okay. Right? The eater is actually doing the pour, and the guy just giving him lending a finger. It's considered primarily an act of Yisrael, and it's okay. The problem is, you might absentmindedly just leave it on his hands. He'll complete the task, and that's a problem. Okay, now we move on to the story of the siphon. Siphon is that sort of double-sided pipe. So it's used to siphon liquid, transfer liquid from one kli to the other. So let's say you have a big container or a barrel of wine. So you have this double-sided, like a V-shaped pipe, overturned V, as is illustrated on the left side of the margin here. So one side, it's a hollow pipe, right? One side is inserted into the source barrel of wine. That's the gishta. Ubas gishta is the door of the gishta. So that's the secondary pipe coming from the other side. And that's also hollow. And you put that into your container. And you sort of, through by way of suction, you suck, you suck out the air, create a certain vac, like a vacuum, right? So first you insert one side into the liquid and you suck until you suck out all the air. And then the wine just starts flowing on its own into the new container, right? Because of the vacuum, the pressure of just, you know, the vacuum, so it just keeps on filling with wine and keeps on flowing out the other way. How does this relate to Yayin Esek? Ugarva, there was a story of a fellow, the Asik Chamra. So he was in the middle of transferring the wine through this siphon apparatus. Begishto Baskishto. Okay, so again, he had one end of this double-sided V, you know, inserted into the pipe above, and he arranged for the wine to flow through the other side into the container below. Along comes a guy. Ah, so it gechom anach yodia gishto. And he placed his hand. He touched the outlet where the wine was flowing out into the new container. Asrei rabba lekulei chamra. So certainly the wine below becomes aser because it's now mixed with yayin. But even the wine above, meaning in the source container, is aser. Why? Some say it was Rav Adar Mamasna who turned to Rav L'Rav of Amrila. Some say it was Ravina who addressed Rav L'Rav. But my, why? How did the content of the upper kli become forbidden? Benitzuk, is it because of the Nitzuk concept? Because it's all one flow, and now when he touches the bottom of the flow, everything, even above it, becomes Asr. Shamas Mina Nitzuk Chibur. Do you mean to say that Nitzuk is a connection? No, says the Gemara, you don't have to say that. Shani Hasam. This case is very different. The kuli chamruk, all the wine in the source container, is headed for the container below. The kuli chamra, agishto baskishto gur. It's all being drawn after this siphon machinery. Right, so it's all one continuous unit of wine. So although the guy merely touched the far end, the outlet, the wine coming through the other side, but it's as though he touched the wine within this siphon, and by extension, everything within the source barrel, which was protruding, which was providing the material for this flow. It's all one continuous unit of liquid, because it was all headed in that direction, in which case it's all Yayin Nesach. Here's another similar type of case. A Kanishkinen is it's a container with many straws, so to speak, many faucets. So many can actually drink at once. Right? The picture is like a container with many spouts. So you can have 5-6 people drinking at the same time. And now there was wine in the, container. And you have a guy and a yid drinking at the same time. Is that okay? Yeah, because as long as the guy is just drawing out, that's okay. The wine within the kli is unaffected and you see, it's different than the previous case, where the guy's contact of just a drop at the end makes everything usher. It was very different because you have to actually suck it out, as opposed to the Kanishkin system. The previous system where it was just already set up and it's just flowing on its own. Here, the customers, the drinkers, have to actually actively suck for the wine to come out. As soon as he stops, that's it. It's not going to come out anymore. So sure, whatever he sucks and drinks is Yayin Esach. It's Tam Yena, whatever, but whatever's still beyond his reach is kosher wine, which allows a yid on the other side of this Kanishkinin to draw and drink. So again, Kanishkanin Shari, it's okay. So a yid and a guy can actually drink at the same time. Now, Vanimil, that's only true of the Kodim Pasak Yisrael. So after the finished drinking, who stopped first? Yisrael. Okay, so we're both drinking at the same time. The yid stopped. It's okay. Aval kadam pasak. Oy gechavim loy. But if the guy stops first, that's a problem, because now when he stops, the wine which had already been up by his mouth, which already touched his mouth, trickles black into the kli, which makes everything usher. What? So that's different. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Bar Huna actually implemented this halacha. Ikla lebeir shkuzi, came to the house of the household of the head of the community in Bavel, and he issued a verdict in favor of this type of activity. Shorul, he allowed them lemishta to drink bekinishkinin, using this apparatus. Ikadam Rasam, so he himself did it. Rabbi Bar Huna Gufi himself ishti drank bekinishkinin, using this apparatus without any concerns of Yayin Nesach. Okay, so we had a couple of stories regarding some real estate deals. It's not a commitment until there's a pasak, as we find in the case of the produce, case of the Yayin Nesach. We have the halacha regarding, you know, proper appraisal, what's considered a binding appraisal. We moved on to a wine seller dishing out his wine to the Jewish and non-Jewish customers, how to go about it. There's an issue of nitzuk, which according to Rav Huna, nitzuk is chibur. Rashi says, v'chein halacha, that's how we paskin. We discussed these two types of apparatuses, the gishta bas gishta, which creates this continuous flow, which is considered a connection. It makes it all into one unit, as opposed to the kanishkinin, where the guy is allowed on board, provided there's no actual mix of yayin nesach in the container. Up until that point, Yisrael can drink along without any concerns. All the best, you not slacharav.